we actually report out on our progress towards our zero carbon plan goals. And very happy to report that we're actually making really, really good progress against those goals.
The goal of 2030 is 15 years ahead of California's own 100% zero carbon energy goal of 2045.
It wasn't just like, how do we get to zero carbon, but how do we make sure how our customers and community can help be part of that solution? It's actually a lot less expensive to charge your electric vehicle than to buy gasoline.
Do you think that the same kind of model can be replicated? You can set an aggressive timeline, do the research required to meet it, and then subsequently meet that timeline. Is it possible? Do you feel optimistic for others?
I mean...
Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. If you are anything like me, you've probably wondered this too. What is it really like to go zero carbon, especially in an energy reality marked by shifting attitudes about the climate, the costs, and the cultural impacts? When you're balancing gradualism with urgency, business priorities with environmental responsibilities, and the customer in every move you make, how do you set goals, track progress, and make change on an aggressive timeline? Today, we're getting a real-world answer to those very questions from Rachel Wong, Director of Distributed Energy Solutions at SMUD. Now, SMUD is one of the first utilities in the nation to commit to zero carbon by 2030, and we're only a few years off from that deadline. So today, Rachel is giving us a rare peek behind the curtain into SMUD's effort to turn net zero into tangible, customer-focused progress, ensuring electrification doesn't come at the expense of reliability, affordability, and economic growth. Rachel, welcome to Power Perspectives. How are you today?
Thank you. Doing really well.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. As I mentioned, I'm excited for this conversation. Hearing more about the work that you're doing is something that I have been looking forward to since we first got this on the book. So I think if you don't mind, it makes sense to start by just telling me a little bit more about your role at SMUD. Can you talk to me about how your team does work? What is the work and how does it fit into SMUD's broader electrification missions and goals and you know, ambitions?
Sure. Happy to speak to that. You know, so my team is called Distributed Energy Solutions, and I actually have our strategy all the way through our delivery for our distributed energy solution-based program. So that's things like energy efficiency, building electrification, transportation electrification, load flexibility, battery storage, distributed generation, and a green pricing program. So really what it is it's all of those customer-facing technologies that can help us both decarbonize as well as ensure sustainability for our utility and for our electricity as well.
And getting the customer bought in on all of this is obviously of incredible importance. I'm sure we'll spend a lot of this conversation talking about the customer specifically. But before we get into that, I would love to have just a brief, you know, side quest here to talk about what electrification and net zero means in the modern context. You know, for so long, it feels like we've heard from companies, from countries about goals to get to net zero, to be zero carbon. But the timelines are unclear, the steps, the actions also unclear. I think we could probably follow up as the media more effectively as well. It can all get a little murky. So do you mind just telling me how you have defined the goal, the electrification goals that SMUD has, and what that definition sounds and looks like today?
Sure, happy to do so. So back in 2020, SMUD's board declared a climate emergency, and they asked our CEO to figure out how we could get to net zero carbon by 2030. And actually what we ended up doing was doubling down and saying, actually, you know, instead of doing net carbon, SMUD would actually go for absolute zero carbon from its electricity by 2030. So over the next 6 months, the team, actually the internal staff team, worked on a plan and basically figured out how are we going to go about pursuing absolute zero carbon by 2030. So this is not net, but this is actually for our electricity sales. How do we actually ensure that our electricity is coming with zero carbon? We have a couple of pillars that meet that. So obviously we do have large utility scale resources and being able to leverage proven clean technologies. And one thing we realized back in that 2020-2021 time period is we probably have the technologies and the knowledge of how to get about 90% of the way there to our 2030 zero carbon goal, but we are going to have to depend upon new business models and new technology developments in order to hit that last 10%. So, you know, we're at 2025 today, so we've been into it for about 5 years. We've got about 5 more years left to go. And really what we've been seeing is we do have a viable path to get there and have needed to depend upon technologies evolving and costs coming down in order for us to be able to achieve our zero carbon plan goal.
Yeah, I appreciate the context on that. It's an important distinction, obviously, to make, but I also want to provide just a little bit more background on the timeline of all of this. As you mentioned, you started working on this in 2020. The goal of 2030 is 15 years ahead of California's own 100% zero carbon energy goal of 2045. So the timeline has been pretty ambitious. And you mentioned about halfway through when we're having this conversation today, as you're waiting for the technology and the market to respond to get you to that last 10%, how does the timeline feel? Does it feel like there's pressure? Does it feel like there's optimism? When you're being, you know, more aggressive with the goal, how does that timeline element factor into the day-to-day, but also the bigger picture strategy at SMUD?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we first minted the goal, we recognized it was a moonshot, but we also recognized that by stretching further and setting a moonshot level goal, it could not only motivate and push us, but push our industry forward as well. I think what we're seeing is that we do have a viable pathway to get to zero by 2030. I will say, though, with a lot of the loss of federal funding and federal support for some of those clean technologies, it's going to be more challenging, especially from the affordability standpoint. So one of the things we said when we minted our zero carbon goal is, you know, we want to get to zero carbon by 2030, but we want to do so with some key guardrails. So we want to make sure we've got world-class reliability. We want to make sure that we have affordability, so keeping rates at or below inflation. And we want to make sure that we're bringing all of our customers along. So that's a big part of, you know, my team as we think about distributed energy resources too, is it wasn't just like, how do we get to zero carbon? Absolutely. But how do we make sure, especially being a publicly owned utility, how our customers and community can help be part of that solution.
Right. To make it sustainable, not in the green sense, but sustainable in the business sense, I'm sure is a significant challenge. And it's, you know, there are roadblocks, and we're going to talk a little bit more about them. I appreciate you mentioning some of them specifically with regard to changes in federal priorities and federal funding and how that might impact affordability. You mentioned keeping rates at or below inflation. I would love to hear more on the perspective from SMUD of, you know, cost and changes to affordability. Obviously, there is tension between new technologies and maintaining, you know, costs that are tolerable for the end customer. What are the biggest practical challenges of getting to that zero by 2030 goal while keeping customer costs down? Can you tell me a little bit more about how that you know, calculus kind of works as you're prioritizing all of these many different balls you have in the air?
Sure. I mean, I think the key is like, what are the resources we need to be able to get to zero carbon? And we had done some estimates when we minted the zero carbon plan about how much that would cost. But we also recognized, in order to keep rates at or below inflation, we would need to make sure that we were getting additional operational efficiency savings. And we also were looking at the need for additional funding. And so external funding could not, you know, could be anywhere from federal funding, but also statewide funding, as well as partnerships and being able to bring in new net revenue resources as well. So bringing in sources of revenue to help support that financial equation. One thing, though, you know, and I know you had mentioned electrification, as we think about both affordability for SMUD of like, how do we keep costs low, or how do we ensure that we can keep rates low by making sure we're making really good financial choices, we also need to think about affordability and rates for our customers, as you mentioned. And electrification is actually one of those things within our service territory is actually a really good financial equation for our customers. So as we look at transportation electrification, you know, given SMUD's low rates, it's actually a lot less expensive to charge your electric vehicle than to buy gasoline to fuel an internal combustion engine car. On the building side, you know, we're actually pretty uniquely positioned because of SMUD's electricity rates versus our Pacific Gas and Electric's gas rates that customers can actually save when they transition from, you know, gas HVAC systems and gas water heaters to electric technologies like heat pump water heaters and heat pump space heaters. So that financial equation helps both from an efficiency standpoint, but also to help our customers save on their total energy bills as they look at both energy for their homes as well as energy for their transportation as well.
So how do you communicate all of this to customers effectively? You know, public perception is a big part of the conversation for electrification broadly, but certainly for zero by 2030, I imagine it plays a significant role. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you get that message out there, how you speak to everyday consumers about what changes might come, what things they can adopt, what technologies they can buy into. What does that conversation look like between customers and SMUD?
It's a really extensive process to ensure that we've got good communication to both our customers and our community. You know, even when we minted the zero carbon plan, we spent a lot of time basically doing, having listening sessions with key stakeholder groups, talking to customers, having board presentations and board meetings where the public was able to express their ideas and their opinions. And so we spend a lot of time to better understand our customer and really listen to our customers and our stakeholders to be able to utilize that information. We also spent a lot of time with regards to education, and we've got a fantastic communications team that is really invested in not only marketing for the types of programs that we do, but really making sure that we're sending out messages on broader messages about clean energy and Clean Power My City to ensure that our customers are really understanding what our commitments are from a sustainability standpoint. What are the things that we are doing to ensure that we achieve these environmental goals and sustainability, but also what are some of the things that they can do? So it could be as simple as things like education and tips that really don't cost any kind of investment, all the way to doing things like participating in our programs where they adopt new technologies like heat pump space heaters and heat pump water heaters, or buy an electric vehicle to be able to be more sustainable.
And how would you characterize the response so far? Positive, negative?
Yeah, you know,
neutral?
So one of the things we do for our board every single year is we actually report out on our progress towards our zero carbon plan goals. So we actually have been having these board presentations twice a year. I think last year we actually ended up splitting up the utility side progress from the customer and distributed energy resources programs side. So last year and then this year, we actually have reported to the board. I actually just did a board presentation back in September talking about our progress towards our goals across all of our different portfolios. So building electrification and energy efficiency, our transportation electrification, load flexibility, as well as our green pricing programs. And very happy to report that we're actually making really, really good progress against those goals. Now, it's not to say that we don't have some headwinds facing us, like I've talked about with regards to some of the federal funding and the federal support. But, you know, we're still on track in most of our portfolios relative to hitting our zero carbon plan goals. We do expect, like I said, some of these headwinds to make it much more challenging. And so we are looking at, like, what do we need to do relative to finding alternative sources of funding, as well as stretching our dollar further to be able to continue to get that accelerated adoption for the different technologies to achieve our goals. But, you know, our latest report out in September is that across most of our portfolios, we're actually in really good shape. We are ahead of where we wanted to be from a transportation electrification standpoint with regards to the amount of light duty vehicles. So we're at about like over 74,000 electric vehicles in our service territory. We're making good progress against our building electrification goals in terms of equivalent all electric homes. We're making good progress on our participation in green pricing programs. Our load flexibility, we've had been having a little bit more challenges. There had been some supply chain issues in terms of accessibility of battery storage systems to support our virtual power plant. But definitely, so we raised up some of our incentives to kind of help the market a little bit and opened up to some additional battery storage manufacturers. So hoping that that starts taking off a little bit more. But in general, for 2025, we've seen really good progress against our goals.
So on the battery storage supply chain that you mentioned, do you have any idea of what some of the big picture elements are to that stoppage in the supply chain or to the kind of bottlenecks that you're facing? You know, how would you kind of sum it up to our audience of what has precipitated this challenge for you?
Well, I think, you know, at the time we were working with one specific battery manufacturer and they had some supply chain issues so that there wasn't as much availability of the battery storage systems, even though we had incentives available. But that has actually led up for them. And like I said, we also ended up expanding to some additional battery storage manufacturers, which opened up the opportunity to be able to have customers be able to pick some multiple manufacturers to choose from for a battery storage VPP. That being said, opening up the different battery manufacturers, as well as sort of that one supplier being able to access more battery storage systems, also got coupled with the times in which there's a lot more economic uncertainty. And it's still, even though SMUD has some pretty rich incentives for our battery storage VPP, that economic uncertainty has impacted, you know, customers' willingness to procure battery storage. So we're still really excited about that program and wanting to continue to expand it, but recognize that there's some market dynamics in play as well as we think about building up the capacity in that VPP.
Yeah, of course, of course. And I think this lends itself well to a part of this conversation that I'm personally very curious to hear your perspective on, which is just forecasting in general. You know, you set this goal 10 years ago in a different presidential administration with different priorities when it comes to climate and to electrification. When you hit 2030, we will theoretically be in a different presidential administration again with a different set of priorities. So how does load forecasting and forecasting for even the bigger picture of economic realities and customer realities, how is that treated at SMUD? Can you tell me a little bit more about the strategy around forecasting for your team and how that factors into the zero by 2030 goal?
Sure. You know, there is a load forecasting team at SMUD that is separate from mine, but my team is really feeding our load forecasting team and working with them in partnership of understanding what we think customer loads are going to be, especially relative to the DER. So how do we think that building electrification is going to grow? And therefore, what are the implications to our load forecast? What do we think about electric vehicle adoption to be? Where do we think it's going to be as well? So even though we've got sort of the overall system load forecast, how do we also think about where load will grow in specific geographical locations? And what does that mean relative to grid investments needed to support that or mitigating strategies like leveraging load flexibility programs or doing things like managed EV charging on the EV side relative to considerations for grid investments. So my team really looks at all of those different things. I think, you know, the latest as we're looking at, especially with some of the pullback of the federal incentives, I know the EV, the tax credit expired at the end of September. The energy efficiency and building electrification tax credits for residential customers are going to be expiring at the end of the year. So we're obviously seeing a lot of participation kind of running up until those things expire. But as we think about what we might be seeing starting next year, we've been looking at what we think those forecasts might be. We've been doing an integrated distribution resources plan to see how we think about how load flexibility might be able to mitigate some of that grid investments that we'll have to make. I think we think, it's still early. Like EVs is probably the first one where with the tax credit expiring at the end of September, a lot of people saw a run up of EV adoption up until that tax credit. And then October obviously has been sort of that month where it's dipped down. I think looking at some national forecasts, people are expecting that the EV adoption growth is going to slow down versus kind of what the original trajectory would be. I think this is where, as a utility, you know, we do want EV adoption, but the key thing from, you know, our identity as an electric utility is like, how do we ensure that we've got enough charging infrastructure to support customers that do have EVs or people that are considering EVs to feel like there's enough charging infrastructure available for them to adopt an EV, whether it's a new EV or potentially a used EV, actually. And so as we think about adoption, you know, you have your early adopters, we're into that sort of mass adoption as well. But really the next phase is getting those customers that are renters or are multifamily or people that might not be able to do home charging as well. So we're really trying to develop the strategies of how do we strategically think about where that charging infrastructure needs to be? What are things that we need to do to help customers be able to access cost-effective and affordable charging? For example, you know, if multifamily residential customers can only use public DC fast charging, that's actually pretty high from a price point versus someone that could do it at home charging. How do we find ways to be able to potentially lower the costs for those customers to be able to use public DC fast charging? So we've got some initiatives in place to be able to help our customers, specifically looking at like low and moderate income customers that live in multifamily units, as well as transportation network drivers that are using their EVs to be able to earn money and sort of have their own salaries from that standpoint. And how do we think about ways to make that much more affordable for them so that it's easier for them to adopt electric vehicles as well?
Yeah. And so much of this is all part of the conversation around infrastructure, the infrastructure required for electrification today and in the future. Now, another big question mark, another big priority for a lot of people listening to this, but also for the average everyday electricity consumer at home, is reliability. often electrification is kind of put at odds or framed as a risk to grid stability, to that reliability in general. You've kind of flipped that narrative, though. So can you tell me a little bit more about how SMUD is strengthening reliability, how reliability is getting better, increasing through, you know, grid mod tech and through distributed solutions specifically?
Sure. You know, I think the first foundational thing about it is planning, right? Which is like making sure that we're doing the analysis and looking far enough ahead to be prepared. So, you know, yes, you know, you see a lot of headlines, which is like, hey, if we switch to electric cars or if we do building electrification, can the grid handle it? And what I would say SMUD's perspective has been is we have very long taken the effort to do the analysis and plan ahead and look forward to be able to forecast or at least plan some scenarios of what that might look like and think about what that means relative to whether it's investments in the grid or strategies to mitigate or actually optimize what the grid investments need to be. So in the case of transportation electrification, we've been doing analysis for years and years and years. I remember when EVs first started kind of becoming more prevalent, we actually looked at where Priuses were within SMUD's territory to use as an analog of if people have Priuses, maybe they will be the next adopter of electric vehicles. So where will that be and what does the clustering look like? You know, since then, and especially in the last couple of years, we've done actually pretty extensive analysis, both on light duty as well as medium and heavy duty vehicle electrification. On the light duty side, looking at residential transformers and seeing how many EVs are in a residential transformer and thinking about how we need to size residential transformers, both if we did it without managed charging, as well as if we did it with managed charging to be able to optimize how many EVs can fit on a transformer and considerations for transformer sizing. On the medium and heavy duty side, we actually did a blueprint funded by the California Energy Commission, where we actually did market research with 100 of our top commercial customers that have fleets to be able to understand as they electrified, where that charging would need to be, what that load would need to look like, and then looking at it on a geographical basis to see where are the hotspots, like where is there capacity for EV charging and where might there be some grid constraints. If EV charging was going to go in, whether it was for fleets or for light duty vehicles, and then be able to be very strategic about thinking about where we might need to upgrade grid infrastructure or where we might need to actually specifically target customer participation and load management programs, whether it's load management with EVs through managed EV charging or load management in general adoption of battery storage to be able to fit in that capacity for that charging. So we've been really proactive as we think about those electrification technologies. On the building side, most of our electric load is from air conditioning, right? So actually by switching from gas heating to heat pumps, we're actually getting more efficient. We were likely putting in more efficient HVAC. So on the summer load side, we're actually in good shape. Yes, in the very far off future, we may see a new winter peak, but that's sort of more in that post 2050 timeframe. So we're not as concerned on the building side. We do need to think about panel upgrades and things like that. But really, we see that EVs are really going to be that first place that's probably going to hit and are developing ways to mitigate those considerations. I think in general, from like the grid infrastructure to the point about grid modernization, you know, SMUD put in smart meters probably over a decade ago. So we are actually on our second generation of smart meters. So we're putting in AMI 2.0. And really, that's going to enable us to have a lot of grid edge intelligence that's going to be able to help support really being able to think about how are we sending the signals to the different devices and being able to communicate to truly optimize utilization of the grid and the technologies that we're seeing to be able to support all of these things.
Yeah, it's wonderful to get. It does feel like sort of the inside look at how this is operating. And so much of this, too, I think I'm taken aback in some ways by the rare moment for optimism. You know, I love these moments. I cherish them because so often the narratives in the utility industry are huge challenge. We're never going to be able to do this. We need more transmission. We need more investment. We need more infrastructure. And yes, we certainly do, right? But to know that you still feel that the meeting this goal is a possibility, if not a likelihood, with all of this research and the investigation and the understanding and the forecasting that's being done from your team, I think is really interesting. And if you would indulge me, I would love to hear if you think that this is possible in other organizations, you know, at other publicly owned utilities, do you think that the same kind of model can be replicated, that you can set an aggressive timeline, do the research required to meet it, and then subsequently meet that timeline? Is it possible? Do you feel optimistic for others?
I mean, I am a naturally optimistic person. So I think it's the, like, what are the possibilities? What do we need to do to get there? I will say, like I said, I mean, I do realize there are headwinds. And I think more recently, you know, especially from that affordability standpoint, that's kind of where we feel the headwinds are. I think the possibilities are there to be able to get to these aggressive goals. I think the challenge we are all going to face, and we are facing in the industry already, and we're starting to feel it, is how much is this going to cost? And can we still do it given things, you know, SMUD, as you know, there were a lot of grants. We talked about grid modernization. So GRIP grant is a good example where, you know, that was a substantial grant that SMUD received that unfortunately is, while we're being able to, and this is a little, so probably have to redo this, but, you know, the GRIP grant is an example where we had been awarded to help support our grid modernization. And, you know, that grant was pulled back. Now, we are still moving forward with regards to the movement to AMI 2.0, with regards to our next generation of AMI meters, but it is going to be more challenging from an affordability standpoint. So I think the key is that, are there viable paths for us? Are there viable paths for others to be able to achieve these types of goals? I think the answer is yes. I think technology is developing. I think there's ways to be able to get there, but I think the affordability is really going to be the challenge of, can we do so in a way without raising rates too significantly for our customers? Because as public power, affordability is a key. And as I mentioned, it's one of the key pillars of our zero carbon plan. And you know, while I am a very much an optimistic person, I do see that as a significant challenge for us to be able to achieve our goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you mentioned a couple times in this conversation some of the more, you know, alternative financial paths to be taken. In the future, do you expect any additional pathways to emerge? What might that look like as we move into years, you know, 2, 3, and 4 of Trump 2.0 in terms of the financial pathways that might be available to utilities that want to implement new technology at the edge? What is your prediction there, if you have one?
Well, I mean, I think they're similar to the things that I had mentioned, which is, you know, we're in California. So from a state support of the types of goals that we have, we are looking at grants from a state standpoint. We are also working on stretching our dollar further, right? So looking at things, for example, which is like, okay, we've got incentives for a lot of our programs, but how do we think about maybe financing mechanisms to help customers with that upfront capital investment as they think about adopting electrification technologies? Other things are, is as we look at things like EV charging, how do we increase utilization of charging stations to be able to help support the cost effectiveness of putting in those charging stations to be able to give access to those types of customers that might not be able to do charging at home. So we're looking at different strategies, both sort of at the macro level of what are some alternative sources of funding, but also looking at them even at that specific programmatic level of, like, how can we tweak our program design, or how can we look at different approaches to be able to leverage the dollars that we have and access further. I think a big thing too, and we talked about this earlier, some of it is also, it's the education and communication, right? Like going back to that piece about electrification, you know, how much people are interested or even aware of electric technology is like heat pumps. You know, a lot of people don't think about it, right? I think about my heating system. I think about my air conditioning system. I think about my water heater. They don't say, I want a gas water heater. I want a heat pump water heater. They're looking at the prices. They're looking at the functionality. They're looking at, you know, can my teenager take a shower and I still have hot water after them? And so I think a lot of it is education of, too, is making sure that the contractors have these types of technologies to offer to our customers. And we've done a lot, too, with our contractor network. So SMUD actually has a contractor network that I think we've got almost over 300 contractors today that are in our contractor network to be able to help support our customers. And we've done a lot of work with them to make sure that they are aware of and educated about and can speak to these types of technologies intelligently and to be able to offer them to our customers. So when they're at that, you call that the kitchen table conversation, when someone is thinking about changing out their heating system or they're changing out their water heater, that electric technologies are an option for them to consider.
Yeah. You know, Rachel, you've been very generous in opening up the SMUD playbook. I'm curious if I could press you one more time. You mentioned some challenges on affordability and cost. There are the tech questions. There are the financial questions, certainly. If you had to give a single piece of advice to another utility that wanted to accelerate their own electrification efforts, but maybe was concerned about customer perception, affordability, tech readiness, et cetera, what would be the you know little nugget of wisdom that you would offer to another utility or to a utility leader listening to this?
That's a great question. I think, you know, one of the things I love about the electric utility industry is because in most cases we are not competing against each other, right? And it's not to say that's true across the entire board, but in most cases, because we're not competing against each other, the utility industry does a lot relative to sharing information. I had a friend visiting. So my career before utilities was working at Procter & Gamble. And they're like, Rachel, you're going to all these conferences or you're going to all these meetings. What are you doing? You work for a utility and they're based in Sacramento. Like, what are you doing? And it's like, oh, well, it's actually utilities sharing best practices with each other. And so I actually lead the Large Public Powers e-mobility task force, and we do a lot of discussion, and there's utilities across the board, right? You've got your West Coast utilities that might be really gung-ho on sustainability measures, but you've also got utilities that are, you know, across the U.S., which have different state policies and encouragement relative to things like electrification adoption. And I think one thing that there's sort of two things. One is, as we think about electrification, regardless of where you are across the U.S., being prepared is important, right? So to the point about doing the analysis or thinking about what might happen, yes, you might be in a state where there's not huge support for transportation electrification, but you might have corporations like an Amazon or something like that that is still going to electrify their fleet because it makes sense from a financial standpoint. And so even with things like federal dollars being pulled back or grant dollars being pulled back, in some of these cases, the financials still work out. And I think that's something like I talked about building electrification or transportation electrification. In some cases, the financials may still work out even without the grant funding or the tax credits. And so it might not be accelerating adoption as quickly, but there's still those pockets. And so as you think about that, think about being prepared and doing the analysis and thinking about what might happen, because then you can really, then you've got those scenarios to be able to look at. Then you still can make the decision of how much do I invest to be prepared, but being prepared so that when something does come into your service territory is really valuable. And then in other cases, like I said, because in some cases the financials may still work, and we do see this across some utilities across the U.S. where even they don't necessarily have those statewide policies that are pushing electrification, for example, but they are actually seeing really good electrification adoption. They've kind of figured out what is that sweet spot relative to the financials and where are those customer segments that would be interested, and really targeting those spaces to be able to bring electrification and where that can be. So I think that's the thing, is it's really looking at those scenarios of what could be coming for the future, doing the analysis and being prepared, because it might just come up sooner than you think, or it may come in pockets where you've got, you know, customer segments that are interested to adopt that might not necessarily be aligned to kind of what that overall picture is, but being able to serve your customer and serve your community in that need. And I think that's something that SMUD's always done, is we also look ahead because we want to make sure that when customers are ready or interested, that we're able to engage with them and we're able to help them make really good decisions. And we saw that with EVs as well, is SMUD launched a campaign called Call SMUD First on EVs, which was, hey, the best thing for us is to know when a customer is interested before they have bought their EV, before they are starting looking at charging equipment, right? Because then we can plan and see where do we think those clusters of grid investments might need to be. And then therefore, how can we, one, educate the customer on right sizing, what equipment they need, and two, being prepared in terms of what are some of those programs we can offer our customers, or we can offer our customers around those customers to be able to optimize the investments that we need to make. And that's really what helps us. If we can optimize the grid investments that we make, then that can really help us relative to keeping our rates low and supporting the affordability message that we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, always be prepared, right? I think that's the big takeaway here, especially if you are a fan of the laws of physics, the laws of economics, you can probably surmise that electrification is not really going anywhere if you are fans of either of those things. So, Rachel, this has been so wonderful already. I would love if we could just jump into a quick lightning round. I'll give you some really fast, rapid-fire questions, and we can end this with a bang. So, is there an electrification technology that you think is really cool, but maybe under-discussed or underutilized by your utility peers?
You know, I saw that. So I'll be really honest. I saw that question, and there's not really. I mean, there's a lot of technologies that we are already leveraging and we're exploring. I don't know if there's one that's like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. The one thing I've been seeing that I've been sort of musing about, I don't know if it's like, hey, this is a game changer, but one of the things we're seeing is we're starting to see batteries integrated into certain technologies. So there's an AC company that is looking at actually, instead of doing residential batteries separately, they're actually incorporating the ability to have a battery with the HVAC system. And, you know, there's a startup company that actually has batteries with induction stoves, right, to be able to meet two needs. One is the consumer need of, if my power goes out, can I still boil water? Can I still have food? But also, you know, how do I mitigate that people tend to cook at peak times? And so therefore, can I use batteries, you know, integrated batteries? Again, for me, these are not necessarily like, oh my gosh, I would like run off and invest in these types of things. But what it speaks to me is this changing paradigm of like, you have to have a separate residential battery storage system versus do these devices have batteries like sized just to address that specific impact on the grid that can help mitigate the investments needed on the grid infrastructure that could really help from an affordability standpoint. Obviously, those costs of that adding that battery to that device or that, you know, that equipment needs to make sense for both the customer and for the value that it's going to bring relative to mitigating the grid. But I've been seeing a lot of these models and it's been sort of like, oh, that'll be interesting, especially in that HVAC in that HVAC model. I know EPRI's actually doing some testing with regards to that battery integrated with HVAC systems. But you start thinking about it, right? I think the thing with EVs as well, like we've long heard the promise of V2G, and now I feel like we're kind of at the cusp of when that might actually kind of break through in the US. I know overseas there's been more, in Europe there's more of that, but you know, those types of things of like, how do we think about residential, like a standalone battery storage system versus integrated batteries into devices, and then how do you leverage those things is something that I'm watching.
Yeah. Okay. I won't make you pick a favorite. That one was pretty cool. I think it gives us certainly a lot to go on. So my next question for you, Rachel, what is the most fun part of working in the utility industry today?
So as I mentioned, you know, my background is actually before I entered the utility industry, I worked in consumer products and consumer product development. And so that's actually where I learned, like, how do you look at customer understanding and customer segmentation and customer behavior and really think about what are those pain points for the customers or what are the unmet needs for customers and how do products solve those problems? I think one of the most exciting things for me in the energy industry, especially from the vantage point that I have from a distributed energy resources standpoint, is that like how customers can be part of the solution. That's something that SMUD prides itself being a municipal utility and how we serve our customers in our community. Customers have access to these technologies and they have the ability to really help be part of the solution. But the interesting thing too as a municipal utility is when customers are part of the solution, the value propositions come back to them, right? They get bill savings, but that also keeps that money local, right? Instead of, you know, a large utility scale, you know, generator that's going to a company that's probably not located in Sacramento, by investing in our customers and investing and helping our customers invest in these technologies and options, not only are they being able to actively be part of the solution, but they also keep that investment in our local community. And I think that that's a really fundamental, amazing thing. Now, that alone, you do need the utility scale resources. You need to do multiple things. But one of the things I really enjoy the most about my job and working in utilities is being able to bring the customer and the technology together to help support the solutions as we think about sustainability goals, but also what that means relative to investment in our community and making sure that we are really thriving in the Sacramento P.
All right. That's wonderful. I love hearing that answer. Now, my last question for you here in a sentence or two, do you have any bold predictions or hot takes about the state of electrification in the next handful of years?
I'm an optimist. I think electrification is going to continue going forward. I realize that there might be a little bit of a slowdown. I think that EVs are here to stay. And I think that that will just continue to grow. I think building electrification, I think there's opportunities in the heat pump space. I know that there's a lot of concerns about induction cooking and people losing their gas stoves. I do think that electrification is the pathway for us to get to more sustainable solutions. And I think that we will continue down that path as well. So,
all right. Well, as we continue down the path, Rachel, I would love to have this conversation again, certainly hopefully before 2030. But this has been such a wonderful, wonderful conversation, a wonderful look inside, you know, what you're doing at SMUD, what your team is doing, how electrification is shaping the future of the grid, of customer experience. I'm just so grateful for your time and for all the insights that you shared with our audience today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
Wonderful. And thank you to all of you for listening to this episode of Power Perspectives. Make sure you subscribe wherever you are listening, and I will see you next time.